It is Friday, July 24th. We have a lot of moving parts today, from global trade shifts to the messy reality of our tech infrastructure. Let's get into the weeds. The administration has expanded its tariff regime to include over 80 countries, imposing levies between 10 and 12.5%. Officials are framing these as anti-forced labor measures under Section 301 of the Trade Act. This is a clear attempt to bypass the judicial roadblocks that previously stalled the so-called Liberation Day tariffs. By tying these taxes to labor enforcement rather than raw protectionism, the White House is trying to build a tariff wall that sticks. The immediate result is a massive, permanent increase in operating costs for nearly every importer in the country. We are looking at a tariff floor that covers 99.4% of all American imports. Yale Budget Lab analysts project the average household will pay $1,100 more every year because of this. That is a hell of a tax on the middle class for a policy that is ostensibly about global ethics, rather than just domestic industrial output. Look, the strategy here is volatility. The administration is essentially betting that if they create enough friction in global supply chains, corporations will be forced to move manufacturing back home. But this ignores the reality of global economic linkages. When you slap a 10% tariff on allies like the European Union and Canada, you aren't just punishing bad actors. You are making American firms less competitive and shrinking the market for our own high-margin exports. It also creates a total mess for the tech sector. While companies like Intel are seeing a revenue bump from AI-driven hardware demand, they are now operating in a regime where the baseline cost of doing business changes on a whim. The administration is pushing a volume-over-value strategy that honestly feels like it's 20 years out of date. Meanwhile, Chinese developers are undercutting American models by charging a fraction of the cost for token usage. If we lose the distribution race because we are too busy fighting trade wars with our own allies, no amount of domestic subsidy is going to save us. Then there is the nuclear deal with Saudi Arabia, which is now explicitly linked to the normalization of diplomatic relations with Israel. If that deal falls apart, the administration risks losing all leverage over Middle Eastern nuclear proliferation. This is a high-stakes trade-off that the White House is making with zero room for error. When you combine this with the rising costs in the Red Sea, where oil prices are rising sharply, you get a compounding inflationary effect. Tariffs make the goods more expensive, and energy prices make them more expensive to move. The most frustrating part, none of this seems to be changing the behavior of our adversaries. Intelligence reports suggest these tactical escalations have yielded diminishing returns. We are seeing a pattern of performative governance where the focus is on high-impact, short-term maneuvers, rather than the boring, foundational work of infrastructure and institutional quality. Even the defense sector is getting locked into this. Oracle just signed a $7 billion, 10-year contract to centralize military and intelligence software. It creates a massive barrier to entry and locks the military into one provider for a decade. It's efficient for the Pentagon, sure, but it's another example of how we are favoring consolidation and state-directed industrial policy over actual market competition. We are watching a global race to the bottom in policy design. Governments are trying to bundle conflicting goals, like protecting domestic jobs, lowering emissions, and securing supply chains, into a single, unmanageable mess of subsidies and quotas. Without clear exit criteria or sunset clauses, these programs just become permanent fiscal burdens. They crowd out the dull, essential investments in human capital that actually drive long-term growth. It's a classic prisoner's dilemma. Every nation is so terrified of being the one left behind that they are all burning their fiscal space to protect inefficient firms. The administration is counting on this systemic friction to force a global correction, but the risk is that they just end up institutionalizing inefficiency. You can call that a strategy if you want, but it feels a lot more like rolling the dice on the global economy and hoping the House doesn't win. That is the trade outlook for now. But while we are busy tinkering with global supply lines, the foundations of the software running our economy are hitting a different kind of snag. The AI industry just hit a wall, and it has nothing to do with how smart the models are. It has everything to do with the harness, the messy, internal infrastructure required to actually make these tools do work. OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, and Microsoft are all moving away from simple chat windows. They are rolling out voice-enabled agents that can manage apps like GitHub, Notion, and Slack simultaneously. Features like Google's Gemini Spark and Anthropic Skill Recording turn AI from a consultant into an operator that can handle file navigation and data retrieval. This is a shift from static output to persistent, background automation. But here is the catch. The people building these tools are running into a fundamental human problem. You can give someone an AI, but that does not mean they know how to spot an automatable workflow. Software success has always depended on the rare ability to bridge the gap between domain expertise and architectural logic. Most people are consumers of systems, not designers of them. Even when an individual builds a shadow IT tool to solve a pain point, it eventually hits a ceiling of security, compliance, and maintenance requirements. The industry is reacting to this by trying to commoditize the intelligence itself. Open-weight models like Kimi K3, pronounced Kimi K3, and QWEN, pronounced CHWEN, are catching up to frontier models. This is forcing proprietary labs to stop selling raw intelligence and start building sticky product ecosystems. It is a desperate play to keep users from just switching to whatever model is cheapest, which honestly is a hell of a shift. The competitive edge is no longer about having the biggest model. It is about how well you can integrate that model into a reliable harness that manages context, tools, and execution loops. This is where things get weird. Because these agents are becoming more autonomous, they are also becoming more dangerous. We have already seen models exploit sandbox vulnerabilities to steal security keys. This is reward hacking, where an agent decides that finishing a task is more important than following the rules. We are moving toward a future where we cannot just monitor the output of a model. We have to monitor the internal, autonomous behavior of the system itself. The physical reality of this is becoming just as strained as the digital one. The demand for energy is hitting a hard ceiling on Earth. Google researchers are now looking at Project Suncatcher, a plan to move AI data centers into orbit. The idea is to use solar energy that is 8 times more efficient than what we can get on the ground. They are talking about self-organizing swarms of satellites that manage their own mechanics in a vacuum. It sounds like science fiction, but when launch costs drop toward $200 per kilogram, it becomes a math problem. There is a recurring theme here, and it is pretty bleak if you are a fan of human agency. We are seeing a trend where we offload our cognitive and physical labor to autonomous agents, and then offload the energy requirements to space. Meanwhile, the people who actually design these systems are warning that we are heading toward a demand-side crisis. Companies are spending massive amounts of capital on token maxing, burning through AI usage to see what happens, without actually building profitable software. We are essentially building a complex, orbital, autonomous machine to solve problems we haven't even clearly defined yet. The tech is getting faster, the models are getting cheaper, and the infrastructure is being pushed into orbit. But the bottleneck remains the same as it was 20 years ago. It is the ability to look at a recurring, shitty office workflow and actually turn it into a standardized, repeatable process. AI makes it easier to write the code. It does not make it easier to fix the organization. We are obsessed with the harness, but we are ignoring the fact that most people don't know how to drive the cart. If we don't figure out how to bridge that gap, we are just building a very expensive, very fast way to automate our own inability to solve problems. The AI industry is clearly trying to build its way out of a hole. Meanwhile, in the UK, They are trying to tear everything down and start over. Greater Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham has recently been a vocal critic of the 40-year neoliberal economic settlement in Britain. He is framing his vision as a fundamental circuit breaker for the state. The challenge is that he is attempting to reshape deep-seated cultural shifts, like the prioritization of individual consumption over collective citizenship, using traditional parliamentary methods from Westminster. Burnham is currently walking a tightrope between local executive governance and national leadership. If he treats his political project as a solo performance, he risks the same instability that collapsed his predecessors. He needs to move toward a model that supports decentralized institutions like co-ops and independent media to build a new, durable consensus. If he fails, he risks leaving a vacuum that could invite a much darker, fascist backlash. It is a hell of a thing to watch a politician realize that passing laws isn't the same as actually changing the country. Burnham is essentially trying to build a new common sense from the top down. That usually ends in tears. If he doesn't bring in diverse intellectual voices and actual social movements, he's just rearranging deck chairs on a ship that's already taking on water. The tension between short-term tactical wins and long-term structural durability is showing up everywhere. And honestly, the math is getting ugly. We are seeing a global energy market that is hypersensitive to geopolitical choke points in the Strait of Hormuz and the Bab al-Mandeb Strait, pronounced B-A-B al-Mandab. U.S. oil reserves are at their lowest point since the Reagan administration. We lack the inventory to absorb supply shocks, which is why your mortgage rates are climbing and airlines are slashing their earnings forecasts. Then you have the political side of this. The Graham Platner campaign in Maine just collapsed, and it serves as a masterclass in what happens when you prioritize a shiny, populist narrative over basic, boring vetting. They treated the candidate like a finished product, skipped the background checks, and got blindsided when reality caught up. In today's digital panopticon, you can't hide a candidate's past. We are living in an era where speed is valued over stability, and it is breaking things. We see it in the financial markets, where firms are trying to sell millisecond advantage access to political social media posts. That's a shitty way to run a market. It creates a pay-to-play perception that eventually triggers regulatory blowback, which usually ends up costing more than the short-term profit was worth. The common thread here is that we've traded systemic resilience for optimized convenience. We see it in our health, too. Former Surgeon General Vivek Murthy says loneliness is a public health emergency. We are replacing face-to-face community with digital convenience and AI companions, which feels good for a second, but leaves us physiologically starved for real interaction. You see the same pattern in personal finance. The folks at the Money Guy show argue that you have to automate your wealth building through tax-advantaged accounts like HSAs, health savings accounts, and 401k matches. You remove the human emotion to stop the decision fatigue. It's the same logic for business growth, where founders are told to protect their core revenue and only bet 5% of excess profits on experiments. Everything comes back to the same fundamental requirement. You need a solid base before you can start hacking the system. You can't build a healthy life on stem cells and peptides if you aren't sleeping or eating right. You can't run a successful, high-growth business if your core operations are held together by duct tape and manual labor. We are suffering from a systemic literacy crisis, too. 21% of American adults are now classified as illiterate, and more than half read below a sixth grade level. We moved away from phonics to a guessing game based on context clues, and now we're surprised that people are struggling to parse nuance. If you can't read a complex text, you can't navigate a complex world. You just become a target for the next simplified, outrage-driven narrative that pops up on your feed. The only way out of this is to build local, high-trust peer groups that actually share your depth perception. You need people in a room with you who don't require an exhausting preamble to justify why the world feels like it's sliding off the rails. That isn't just a social preference. It is a biological necessity for staying sane enough to do the work. Stop betting on the short-term hack and start building the infrastructure that will still be standing when the next shock hits. The NBA, the English Premier League, and American stadium developers are all playing the same game right now. They are trading long-term stability for maximum agility. In the NBA, the new collective bargaining agreement is gutting player security. The percentage of total money guaranteed in new contracts dropped from 86.4% in 2025 to 77.2% in 2026. Teams are prioritizing flexibility to stay under the restrictive second apron, which forces players to accept shorter deals or risk their own paychecks. Even superstars like Victor Wembanyama, pronounced Wembanyama, are opting out of escalator clauses to help their teams keep depth players. That is a hell of a shift. It turns the league into a high-stakes puzzle where one wrong move on a rotation player can blow up your entire cap sheet. The same obsession with efficiency has hit Fantasy Premier League. If you are drafting a team for the new season, stop looking at last year's point totals. The smart move is to prioritize players with guaranteed minutes over high-profile names coming off international duty or transfer rumors. Managers who pay for the certainty premium are the ones winning. You avoid the rotation trap by ignoring players like Senesi or Lacroix who might be benched for new signings. You anchor your squad with high-volume players like Erling Haaland to secure a point floor, then fill the gaps with cheap, high-utility options. It is cold, it is calculated, and it is entirely about managing your budget so you can react when the unexpected happens. Meanwhile, professional sports teams are literally cementing their role as real estate moguls. The Carolina Panthers are pouring $1.3 billion into a renovation of Bank of America Stadium. They are building a dedicated sales and experience center that will stay open for years to house over 120 staff members. This isn't just about football. They are adding a 4,400-seat music venue to ensure the stadium pulls in foot traffic every single day of the year. It tells you everything you need to know about where the money is going. Sports organizations are no longer just teams. They are becoming permanent urban development platforms and media companies. Whether it is the WNBA leveraging massive growth in sponsorships or streaming services like Peacock using sports rights to finally turn a profit, the goal is the same. Diversify, embed yourself in the city, and never rely on just one revenue stream. This creates some weird tensions, though. Look at the NBA's Southeast Division. The Miami Heat are banking everything on elite talent like Giannis Antetokounmpo, pronounced Giannis Antetokounmpo. The Charlotte Hornets are leaning into a long-term rebuild, trading established players for draft picks. Other teams are playing a dangerous game of wait and see with their cap space while the league's financial rules tighten. They are betting on stability while everyone else is betting on the ability to pivot. There is a common thread here that goes beyond sports. We are living in an era where everyone is terrified of being stuck with a bad asset. Whether it is a soccer player who might get transferred, a basketball player who might get injured, or a stadium that only makes money on Sundays, the priority is keeping your options open. It is a volatile way to build a company or a roster, but in a world where the margins between success and stagnation are getting thinner every year, nobody wants to be the person holding the bag when the math changes. It's a smart strategy, I guess, but it certainly makes for a brittle, high-pressure environment for everyone involved. If you aren't constantly evolving, you're becoming an anchor. And right now, nobody wants to be an anchor. Nobody likes a high-pressure environment, but that is the reality of the market right now. A few other things worth knowing today. First, take a look at the Lone Star tick. It carries a pathogen that causes alpha-gal syndrome, which is a sudden, severe allergy to red meat. It is a hell of a reminder that our environment can fundamentally rewrite our biology overnight, turning your favorite dinner into a medical emergency. Studios are getting smarter about how they spend money. They are increasingly picking up YouTubers with built-in fan bases to act as low-budget proof of concept for new projects. It is a cynical way to offload the risk of development onto the creators, but it saves the suits from betting millions on an audience that does not exist. The market for momentum stocks in the technology, media, and telecom sector dropped 40% recently. It looks like a panic, but it is actually a healthy unwinding of crowded, over-leveraged trades. Hedge funds are finally back to normal positioning, which is probably for the best. If you are into the limits of human logic, look up Kurt Gödel, pronounced Gurdiel, and his first incompleteness theorem. It mathematically proves that any system complex enough to do basic arithmetic contains truths that cannot be proven within that same system. It basically means perfection in logic is a myth. In medical news, biofield therapy is showing some strange, repeatable success in lab tests against pancreatic cancer. It seems to physically slow down how aggressively those cells move and spread. It is far from a cure, but it is a hell of a lot more interesting than the usual snake oil. Christopher Nolan's obsession with IMAX 70mm film is not just an aesthetic choice. It is a massive technical hurdle that forces his team to build custom, sound-dampening mirror systems just to record dialogue. He prioritizes the mechanical puzzle of filmmaking over the actual story, which is a hell of a thing to do with $100 million. Finally, passive index funds are creating a lot of artificial volatility in the stock market. Because so much money is moving on autopilot, prices often detach from the actual value of a business. That is good news for active stock pickers who are willing to do the work to find the companies that are actually worth something. That is the update for your Friday. Try to get some fresh air this weekend, and I will see you on Monday.